I'm all alone with nobody here beside me. Okay, Nick's calling in today. This is going to be a fun one. Welcome back to another episode of Life in the Fast Lane. How you doing, Nick?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. You are heading to Belmont. We just recorded a podcast, but we decided to double down on our time and make it worthwhile.
That's right. We got to get things done, be efficient, not waste time, don't waste money.
I like it. I'm waiting for the day that we do a on the road episode. We plug this board into your truck and just send it.
That's right. We need to do that, but I needed you there to get some stuff done. And I was like, I'm just gonna go, and I'll just call in and we'll make it happen.
But, well, that and I got some mowing later, so I don't want to be out too late tonight.
Yeah, and it's getting late in the day, so it is what it is. We're getting things done, and and lean, mean machines, that's who we are.
I like it. So you have one you want to talk about now, and that would be overtime.
Yeah, when I was walking out the door, somebody said something, it triggered my mind of the days of, you know, being a landscape business owner and guys always wanting overtime and how drastically that affects a business. It's dollars, it's cash flow, it's scheduling, it's time. It's just, it's a really big subject that a lot of guys do not spend enough time talking about.
Yeah, and there's a stigma to it that can be kind of muddy for the business owner, but then when it comes to the guys, it tends to make the guys happy. Especially after like a winter off, and if you don't do snow, or at least in the landscape industry, I should say, when you don't do much snow or anything like that, you want the overtime because they want to put the money back in their pockets, or they want to accumulate it so that they can have time off.
I get that. But at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to a business, think of it like a pot of gold, right?
Yeah.
That pot only has so much money in it. And if you're, let's say, double dipping into it because you're overtiming money and all that, what you're really doing is, maybe think of it like this. Think of it like the crab population, right, in the Chesapeake Bay. Crabs, if you over crab, you end up with no crabs to reproduce, and then you extinct basically an entire species.
Exactly.
You know, in our bay. And that is a negative. Flat out, that is a negative. And what you have to understand is, you know, basically the guys want the overtime money is a quick fix to ultimately a larger problem. The larger problem, truthfully stands from a point of everybody in today's day and age is Amazon-ified, if you will, where they want to be able to quick fix everything. They want to be able to get everything tomorrow. The fact of the matter is, think Dawson Manufacturing. Dawson Manufacturing is bigger today than it's ever been. I wanted it to be where it is today 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is growth takes time. Rome wasn't built overnight. And these guys that are, okay, I'll give you a good example. I have a good friend of mine, his name is Alex, he has Platinum Landscapes down in Southern Maryland. And he had some Hispanic guys come to him and say, hey, we'll work for you. And they ultimately ended up demanding 60 hours a week. And Alex was like, see ya, be gone.
Damn.
Because the ramifications of overtime are more than just somebody making time and a half. It's ultimately, it is a guy, his time and a half, the taxes, the insurance, the liability, just there's so much more expense that comes with it. What the guys don't understand is that they're basically poisoning that pot of gold that they're pulling from.
Yeah.
And what they really need to be doing is they really need to be helping the company become more efficient with, hey, boss, have you ever heard of a mulchmate? We can do twice the amount of work in half the time. Right?
Exactly.
If I can help you become more efficient, boss, could we maybe get a pay raise? So imagine this, employees could work normal hours, normal 40-hour work week, get double the amount of work done, but get paid more hourly. Doesn't that sound better than working your life away, sucking the blood of the company, and not having a sustainable, long-lasting business?
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people think about how overtime poisons the well, per se, because they look at it and go, oh, well, I'm just making extra money. You know, they're not worried about how that, you know, that reservoir, that well is doing by itself. They're just worried about themselves. It's a very selfish thing to go, hey, I need 60 hours, right? Versus, hey, what if I can multiply the amount of work we're doing? You know, would I be able to, you know, either increase the money coming to the pocket for, you know, say by pay raise versus just doing overtime? Because overtime, it is, like you said, it's the taxes, it's the liability, it's the insurance, you know, because correct me if I'm wrong, you have to increase your insurance per se for the amount of overtime, or am I wrong on that? I don't know exactly how all that works.
No, that's completely correct. So typically what you do is you do an estimated payroll in the beginning of the year, and then you go to your insurance company, you pay that monthly to the insurance company, and at the end of the year, you do an audit. And when you do that audit, it's ugly. When it comes to overtime, there's typically overtime is not accounted for that money. So on the back end, you know, you're paying all these guys all this extra overtime, and on the back end, you're double screwed.
Yeah.
Double screwed. Where if you would have been smart and you would have took that money instead of giving it to them in overtime dollars, but put that towards equipment and then paid your people the proper amount of money hourly, guaranteed, not like willy-nilly overtime, it's a more sustainable business. Whereas these guys, these businesses, the reason landscape companies come and go is because they only look 2 inches in front of their face.
Yeah.
They don't think about longevity, right? And that's how people end up in massive tax debt, in massive debt in general, is because they're not looking at the future. Like, if you go to a company like Rupert, right? Rupert, they do not allow overtime, period. If you're not back at the shop at 3:30, you're clocked out.
Really?
You're done. They will not run overtime, period. And a really good, I'm going to call it a teammate. You go from an employee mindset because you're wanting all this overtime to a teammate mindset is when you look at the company and go, hey, boss, you know, if we change the route going this direction, you know, we could probably save some time. Or, hey, if we bought a mower that was a little bit bigger, we could save some time there too. We can get way more work done. And at the end of the day, if you're able to get more work done, better quality in a short period of time, you're not only making it a better business, but you're making it a better experience for your customers.
Yeah.
So then your customers are happier, and then those customers then go tell other customers how great you are, and then so on and so forth. So when you end up, if you stop with this employee mindset and this, oh, I got to get overtime, oh, I got to work more hours, think about that. Let's just dive into hours. As a business owner, let's say you're not even, you know, paying yourself right now because you're a young business owner. I got to put in more hours. No. What you need to do is you need to get smarter. And you need to learn that dollars make dollars. You can only make so much money in a certain period of time with your hands, right? But if you can take money and use it like a tool, you then become a business owner. And that is when you start making money that you can't even comprehend.
Exactly. No, and it really does. It kind of unpacks it on a different level for some people, because it really is. It's that, you know, grass cutter to landscaper, landscaper to business owner mindset. It's just a matter of jumping the tiers. And if you're able to look at it for face value, like we always say, is you take the emotion out of it and look at the logical value of it and say, okay, if these guys want to make more money, well, how can we do it without going into overtime? Because I never knew that I've heard about the audits when it comes to your overtime insurance or stuff like that, but I never knew how it worked or that it dipped into your more of your funds per se, because you have to pay out more to be able to cover the insurance per se, which is just insane to me to think about.
Oh yeah. So, okay. So here's how guys get around it. And this is wrong on every level, and you go to jail for doing this.
Yeah.
What they will do, business owners will pay their people their 40 hours. And then when it comes to overtime, they'll pay them in cash.
I have heard about that.
To avoid the taxes and to avoid the insurance. I believe it's a federal offense. Like, you go to jail. If you get caught, you're going to jail. Okay. So it's not, when it comes to those sort of situations, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Right. So how do you fix all this? Here's the deal. You've got to inform your employees, and you've got to get them to understand. I had an employee years ago. His name was Fernando, and Fernando was a great employee. And he had ended up injuring his ACL at home. He was moving, and he hurt his knee. And this guy, basically, we all ended up coming to a head and basically said, look, you either start working smarter or you're going to lose your job because you can't do the work you were doing before. He ran my commercial mowing crew for a year or two. I can't remember what it was before he got hurt. And I went to Fernando. I said, Fernando, I can teach you everything that you need to know to keep you out of the field and get you into the office.
Yeah.
And basically, he had to stop with his employee mentality and start thinking like an owner. And here's how this goes. I'll give you a for instance. I had a community, one specific community. I had lots of communities that we did. But you're talking contracts that are worth several hundred thousand dollars a piece. Like, this one I'm talking about was worth, just the grounds alone was probably worth $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
Right? So we're talking big dollars here for landscape, you know, companies in a HOA. But I would budget a certain amount of time on those job sites, and the guys would go to those job sites. They would start doing the work, and then I would periodically go, you know, to these sites, and I would check on them. And I remember showing up to these job sites, and the crew leader at the time, his name was Edwin. I get there, and they're all sitting there on the ground. It's like 10:30, and they're all sitting there, and the job's barely even started. And I'm like, you have got to be freaking kidding me. And all they were doing was just trying to gain overtime. And what you don't, not only, what you're doing is, not only are you taking time and a half from the company, but you're also reducing the income. And so it's a double whammy on these companies. And so you have to watch your guys, and what they'll do, I've seen it with Ultimate customers. Ultimate customers will buy Ultimate and be like, this is so efficient, this is going to be great, blah, 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 blah. And what ends up happening is these landscapers, the guys in the field that are actually doing the work, will be like, oh, that's dumb, I don't use it, it's going to take away from my overtime, blah, 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 blah. And that is such momentary thinking, because what you're forgetting is, if you use this equipment to its fullest potential, it will then increase the pot size. So at the end of the year, the owner's going to go, holy crap, there's so much more profit here. There is so much more time to get more work, more and more jobs done. Let's get another one of these things. Not only is it going to make my guys' lives easier, I'm going to be able to have a larger pot to then pay them just standard hours. They're going to be able to pay them more for standard hours.
Exactly.
So then, at the end of the day, if you run this play full circle, right, the employees are going to make more money. The customers are going to be happier because the jobs are getting done quicker. Because I can tell you right now, I'd rather somebody come onto my property, get the work done at a great quality, at a high speed, and they're in and out and gone. And I don't have to hear the mowers, and I don't have to hear all this nonsense. If you're on a job, mulching a job for 3 days, I'd be ticked off. I'd be like,
oh, me too.
You don't need to be mulching my house for 3 days. Are you kidding me? Like, I don't want to be thinking. I want it to be like, holy crap. crap, they're in and out and done. This is great. I don't think about it. It's over. I can go on the next thing in my life. Right? So with these employees, they need to stop. They got to stop thinking so small and start thinking, okay, big picture here. Big picture is I want the company to make a lot of money because that means there's more opportunity for me to go, hey, we're doing really well. Can I get paid more? Right? Which then also in turn means, hey, Christmas bonuses and maybe, you know, paid trips or maybe, you know, when there is overtime, you're going to get even higher overtime wages, right? Because overtime, it'll sneak in here or there, but that's okay. But the abuse of overtime is rampant in the landscape industry, especially.
Exactly.
Right? So you've got to understand that if you poison the well that you're pulling from, it's suicide. It is literally financial suicide. So if any of you are listening to this, that you are an employee of a company, whether it's landscaping or not, overtime is literally like injecting yourself with poison. You'll get a momentary hit of, it's like drugs. You'll get a momentary hit of a high, but then the backside is far more detrimental than that momentary upside.
Yeah.
Right? It's a dopamine hit. It's adrenaline. And you're going to crash. You're going to crash. You think that this is going to be great, and it's not. What is great is when a company thrives because all the people that are involved are all pushing in the same direction. They're all making it grow, and they're all going to profit from it in the end.
Yeah, it reminds me of something you said the other day, too, is like there is a difference between employees and team members, and you were saying that employees are silent thieves, and this is the scenario I think you're talking about is how, you know, you're trying to rack up as much overtime as you can, and you're poisoning the well, therefore it's draining the ability for any sort of movement in the company or anything like that, and it I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of that. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. When in that scenario, let me tell you something. An owner of a company, if this owner has any brains, you don't even have to think or look into the books to know what's happening.
Yeah.
You can feel it. You can feel it. You can feel, let's use, I love referencing relationships because we all are in them, and all of this world is a big relationship. I'm driving down the road right now, and there is, I don't know, 30, 40 cars around me right now, and we are in a relationship in the sense of we all kind of know the same rules. We all understand the rules. We have to abide by those rules. If not, we crash.
Exactly.
Right? And this is no different. So as a good business owner, I can sniff out when something's going sideways. And you employees, I'm going to call you employees, the ones that have the bad mindset, they're like, oh, I need overtime. You're a child. And here's why. A parent knows, a good parent knows when their child is lying. They know it. And that is never going to turn out good. If you're lying and trying to get away with it as a child or even as an adult, you know, in the end, you're going to get caught.
Yeah.
You're going to get caught. Just like a relationship, if you're cheating in a relationship, you will get caught. It is a matter of time. And all you're doing is poisoning the pot when you could be taking the same amount of effort and investing into that pot, maybe having a hard conversation, maybe saying, sometimes a boss even needs a little wake-up call and say, hey, man, you know, you've been drinking too much and you come in on Mondays and you're not focused. We need you to be the leader that you're supposed to be. I need you here mentally to help, you know, drive this ship, to you know, sail this ship. We don't want this ship crashing, right? When ships crash, bridges fall.
Yeah, I think that was a little soon, buddy. A little soon.
It might be a little soon, but it's the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
And it all comes from poisoning the well that you're pulling from. Don't do that to yourself. Now, if you're in a situation, right, where you're a great team member of a company, and that company is not, you know, from the top down, not being run for properly, it ask yourself this. Are you saying that because you feel that, or is it actually the reality? Because a lot of employees will badmouth management because management is trying to impose things on them that they feel is stressful. And in reality, is if they would just follow, like, I'll give you a great threat. I'll let this one right out of the bag. Brightview is the biggest landscape company in the world by like $3 billion.
Yeah,
they're 3 to 4 times bigger than the next biggest guy. Here's the problem, because I have direct, connection into that business. It is being run, unfortunately, by the lowest common denominator, because I see it. I'm in the trenches with those guys. I also see the top end management getting very frustrated because the top end of Brightview is correct. Those guys are right. What's happening is it's getting lost in translation at the management level at the branches individually. They are not strong enough. And here's why. The managers are scared to death to crack the whip and tell the guys that are on the front line in the field to do it the way corporate has told them to do it, because they're worried about losing the employees, because the employees think that they've got the managers by the balls.
Yeah.
And that is a bullshit way of running a business. And what has to happen is momentary pain for long-term gain is what has to happen. These managers need to just go, you're poison, you're out. You're poison, you're out. Meaning the lower guys that are trying to run the company and not follow the instructions of how corporate has set it up.
Exactly.
Because they're momentary thinkers. The managers are frustrated because it's so much work to get people to come in to work for them, to train them, to get it to go. But if you think long term and say, okay, I'm going to take it on the chin right now, this is going to suck for a little while, but we're going to get better people in here. We're going to create a better ecosystem and cultivate an ecosystem that is sustainable, that is manageable, that is built on pride, that is built on the love of what we do. We're going to be able to pay better wages. We're going to be more willing to pay better wages because we're going to have better teammates involved here that is going to grow the ecosystem into something that is unstoppable. But for right now, we got to cut the cancer out and then get back into, healing time. When someone has cancer and you've got to cut it out, or you have radiation and you're going through hard times, and we just did a podcast with my buddy Mickey Payne, and he's going through that right now, and I hope that he pulls through. He may or may not, we'll see, but you've got to go through the pain to then end up on the other side, right? No pain, no gain.
Exactly.
And that is, unfortunately, the managers of these branches are failing at that. And maybe they need better tools, but if you want profits, you've got to cut cancer out, you've got to get rid of that over time, and you've got to create a better ecosystem cultivated around the team.
Yeah, and then it also comes down to building the culture to make it so that the team works together, the team understands, hey, we're getting this machine to become more efficient to, increase your wages, but you have to be able to paint the vision without saying, like, hey, this is exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be, hey, this is going to involve work out of all of us. We all need to be all hands on deck in order to get here. But here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to get there. If we can all do it together, this is what the outcome can be.
Yeah. And it really comes down to one word. It's accountability.
Yeah.
Holding people accountable is a really freaking hard. It involves emotions and logic, which is always typically harder to deal with.
Well, it's a superpower. It's something that not a lot of people are able to do now. It's, I want to point the finger at someone else because they don't want to take the blame.
Correct. And that is, if you can learn to take accountability, you're an unstoppable human. You really are unstoppable, and it's just a matter of time until things work out in your favor. It just takes time.
Yeah.
And if you can sustain accountability for a period of time and have the perseverance necessary to overcome or to create or to do what it is you're trying to set out to do, and it's hard to beat someone when they are not willing to quit.
Yeah, I think the one issue with that is the ability for us nowadays to be able to press a button and we get what we want that same day or next day. You know, and it's, I'm not going to put blame on the person that made it this way because it's what he saw that everybody wants, but it's just a matter of accept the responsibility of yourself, not blaming everyone else.
Correct. And there's, you know, managing expectations is kind of key. Like, yeah, we all like to say, you know, people want to blame Amazon for all this, but the fact of the matter is understanding the process of life and knowing, okay, yes, when I'm dealing with Amazon, I can expect to get things in 2 days. But, you know, when you lose someone's trust because you lied or you did something bad, you have to understand that you're going to have to work overtime hard. Not this, see, this is where overtime is good. When you work really, really, really hard to prove yourself in a scenario, given enough time and enough effort in studying whatever it is you're trying to show, it's going to become undeniable. It's kind of like Mulchmate. Mulchmate had no name behind it, right? Mulchmate's name was created, not the name Mulchmate, but the feeling and the understanding of what people come to expect when they hear Mulchmate came from a lot of effort and perseverance through the Dawson manufacturing team.
Yeah.
And the unwaveringness of what is the culture, what is the mantra, of what it is exactly we're trying to accomplish here. And I believe that mantra has been made very clear. I mean, just simply the sheer fact that we're doing a podcast right now, Kyle, just a podcast in general shows it. But then I said, hey, Kyle, I need you to stay here and I'm going to go, right? But I'm going to have time to drive and call in. Let's not waste that time.
Exactly.
That is the basic fundamentals of what Dawson Manufacturing is constructed around, is a no-excuse, no-bullshit attitude in improving life, improving time, improving profits, improving the industry that we know and love.
Exactly. And then also, while doing it, creating a strong company culture where we all have our own accountability and, you know, like you guys around here, it's not that we're sitting around going, oh yeah, we're going to stay here till 6-7 o'clock just because we feel like it. It's, hey, we need to get all hands on deck to get these machines out like this week. This is when it is acceptable. And then beyond that, you know, like we're all on the same page versus going, oh yeah, we're struggling. We're going to sit here and do, you know, sit around with our thumbs up our asses just to collect a dollar.
Right. And right there, that's the problem. People, let me explain something to everybody that's listening here. I have dealt with some of the most successful, richest human beings on the planet. I'm talking about people that had to, back in my day, like in my heyday, there was these titanium, you know, Amex cards at the time. There was like 25 or 50 of them at the time. You know, Shaquille O'Neal had one. Michael Jordan had one. Well, I had three customers that had them. Three. Not one. Three. And they paid me with this Amex card.
Yeah. Okay?
And I've had the opportunity to study these human beings. And I've also listened and learned from other people that have studied these same type of human behaviors, you know, in the past. And the most successful people have the same mannerisms, pretty much the same way of looking at life. They're positive. They're quick to make decisions. They're quick to not make excuses. They do not hold a victim mentality. They're ultra-positive people. They know how to sleep on things as well. So when they have the time, they will sleep on it, and then they'll make a decision. And when they communicate with you, it's typically short and sweet.
Yeah.
Not meant to be rude. It's meant to be just like, okay, go. Because what they end up doing is if they end up having to take too much time to make a decision, decisions then pile up on them. And then they end up with something called decision fatigue. And then they end up having to decide, they have, like, instead of having one or two decisions to make in a day, they end up with 50, 60, 100, 500 decisions they have to make in a day. And then those decisions never stop coming at them. The problems never stop coming at them. So they're able to then be able to manage their headspace better because they get rid of that head trash, because they're able to make decisions quicker. They're able to then logically go at them, not with emotion, and be able to then lead into the next chapter and leave a positive trail behind them, which then in turn makes more people want to be around them, which in turn makes more and more people want to join their team to then help cultivate that really great, you know, space.
Yeah, the more head trash you have, the harder it is to make a decision when you need to make it now.
Right. It truly does. Head trash is the mother of all evil because it slows you down.
Yeah.
You're unable to process information at the rate that you could because let's drinking alcohol is literally a poison that takes from us. And I don't know why we go to it, but it's a drug. It's a legalized drug. All it does is slow down our ability to process. And too many people are too worried about getting home and turning off when what they should be doing is they should be going home and turning it up to clean out that head trash, to clean out that, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness. And the reason they say that is the clean space is a happy space.
Yeah.
And too many people are trying to avoid their problems instead of knocking them the fuck out. Please, do yourself a favor. Stop pushing off things that you can do today. I like what I was talking about with Brightview. If Brightview, and I think they are, you got to keep in mind, that is the biggest ship in our industry. And to right that ship, it's going to take a strong leader. It's then going to trickle down to strong, you know, managers. And it takes a long time to right that ship. And I pray they get it righted because we as an industry can't afford to have a Brightview go down.
Yeah.
We can't. It would be economically a massive, massive, massive blow. We can't have that.
Oh, 100%. It was interesting you were saying about how you need to go home and turn it up. The one thing I was listening to My First Millionaire podcast, and I can't remember which one of the hosts that said it, but one of the practices that he has is that once a week, instead of having everybody like come into him constantly asking questions and shit like that, his assistant would essentially classify what was important and what wasn't important. If it was important, something that actually was within these confines or constraints, you know, it would get to him immediately. But if it wasn't, it went onto a list and they would go through it. And he was like, okay, we have 1 hour. I'm going to go through and make all these decisions within 1 hour. That way I'm not having to fill my headspace with a bunch of trash for no reason. And I'm able to make the decisions now and get them done as soon as possible so that other things can keep moving forward instead of, you know, him being stuck with so much in his face, you know, in his head.
Delegation. The art of delegation is something that I had to learn a long time ago because one of my biggest detriments and downfalls is I can handle way too much.
Yeah.
I can do too much. I can handle too much. Something else I've learned from very successful people is successful people actually aren't really great at what they do. They're really great at managing what they do.
Yeah.
And that is key. So like for me, I'll end up falling into a task that I could have just delegated and then was able to then move on to another decision or delegate something else to another person, you know, over and over and over again. So I could take 100 things on, delegate it to like, say, 60, 70, 80 people and let them get that done. But in turn, I take it on and then I end up basically carrying too much weight. Weight means lack of speed. Lack of speed means you get less done. Less done means you're not as successful.
Exactly.
And a lot of people, especially in the landscaping industry, but I'm the badass. I can do this. I can do that. I'm the man. I can fix this. And you know what? That may be very true. It may be very true. But the fact of the matter is, and the reality of it is that a smart man is typically not a busy man. A smart man is typically very organized, very controlled, not very in a rush. If you ever go into like a restaurant, a well-run restaurant is, they run at a very high pace. But there's a difference between walking fast and running, right?
Exactly.
If you see somebody running, that creates panic. But if you see somebody walking at a high rate of speed, you're like, that person is on the move to get something done.
Yeah, they've got somewhere to be.
They got somewhere to be. And we all know this, but we never actually compartmentalize all this and actually think about it. Our subconscious goes, somebody else is running, I need to start running. Right, Kyle, you just had that experience at Arundel Mills where you know, your wife saw people running, and that starts that releases that panic gene in your mind, right?
Yeah, whereas the old fight or flight.
It's fight or flight. But if you saw somebody moving up, if they're walking briskly, and you're like, oh, they're getting it. Look at them go, right? Big difference in how the human mind perceives it. So you're in a restaurant, and you see waiters running. You're thinking they're probably trying to correct a problem.
Yeah.
But if they're moving at a high rate of speed, you're thinking, oh, that's a well-run restaurant. This feels good. They're on top of their game, right?
Exactly.
That is how we need to look at our businesses, and that's how we need to look at whether you're an employee and you look at the owner, or you're an owner looking at your teammates or your employees. You need to be able to, as an owner, you need to train your people to work at a high rate of speed, because the body in motion stays in motion, and that high rate of speed is then translated to your customers. Your customers feel that.
Exactly.
As an employee, if you see your owner being schizophrenic and, you know, all over the place, you're going to be like, dude, my owner's an idiot. Like, he's not. He doesn't know what he's doing. You have to you know, understand those things. And all of us, owners, employees, teammates, we have to learn that there's a difference between passion and wanting to get something done, and then just panic, paranoia, and being very reactive instead of being proactive. Those two are completely different. Most people have no clue how to differentiate the two until they see somebody else doing it, and they go, oh, look at that, look at that, and they learn how to point fingers. And the fact of the matter is, you more than likely should be pointing the finger at yourself going, well, how could I help this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I find it interesting. I don't know. I got to thinking about it, and I'm listening to the 48 Laws of Human Nature, and it's kind of interesting to think of, like, everybody wants to point fingers somewhere else, but they can't look at it and go, well, I was actually the one that I did that. You know, it was like me with the mulch matrix. Like, I said, yeah, I did that. I messed up. Let me fix it. I fixed it immediately and then went about my day. You know, and to me, that makes me feel better. I don't know. I'm curious what your thoughts are on, you know, what do you think it is that it makes everybody want to point away versus bringing it to?
Nobody wants to be wrong, right? Nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody wants, when you're a child, go back, you have to always go back to your childhood, right? A child raised in a negative state where they're constantly being berated, put down, they are going to ultimately end up in a fight or flight, you know, mentality. And that mentality is not good. We all know that. We all know fight or flight is not good. You shouldn't wait until someone has you back in the corner to start to fight. You have to learn to forecast the storm and then go, okay, well, how big is the storm? Is it a rainstorm? Is it a twister? Is it a Category 1 hurricane? Is it a Category 5? What am I going to be up against here before it even gets there? And I can tell you, like, with our customers, I can tell you who's going to be a problem and who's not. Now, here's the problem that I find. As children, we learn to be squeaky wheels because we will get the attention of our parents. And this then ends up translating into our adulthood. And what happens is people that learn to complain and bitch and moan will get better service. And the problem with that is that as the people providing the service, you need to learn to not do that. Because what you end up doing is you end up making the good customers, the ones that you need to keep, the ones that cause you the least amount of issues, you then end up creating a suffering situation for them. You starve them of the service and the proper care that they, A, deserve because they're good customers, and B, they've earned it with you, right?
Yeah.
I have customers that have earned my time. I also know that when customers start to, right now, we're dealing with a situation right now where someone said, hey, ship us the unit. We will worry about getting it off the truck. They didn't communicate with the truck driver. The truck driver and them, their schedules didn't mesh by like an hour. And instead of just simply making a simple phone call and saying, hey, man, where are you at? Let's get this done. They just sat back and said, not my problem. And then they end up putting themselves into a bigger situation that ultimately is their fault. Because they didn't stop. They weren't proactive. They didn't take control. And they were supposed to. That was totally on them. And there's nothing anybody can do for them at that point. And they end up then turning and looking at us and trying to blame us. And we just go, look at the email you sent us. You said you had this under control. We shipped it to you. And then what people will do is they'll just blame. And that all stems from childhood. So, ultimately, you are at fault for everything.
Yeah.
I say this, my wife hates this saying, and it's because it's true. You, no matter whether it's good or bad, it is your fault.
Yeah.
Completely. It is. At the end of the day, the only time it's not your fault is if you're a child and you got cancer. If you're 2 years old, 1 year old, born with a hole in your heart or a limb that's missing, that's not your fault. That is completely, honestly, it's someone else's fault. Someone else did something wrong. They didn't eat properly. They didn't exercise. They didn't, you know, marry the right person. There's all kinds of different things that can cause it. And unfortunately, those sort of things are not your fault. But once you get to adulthood, I'm more speaking to adults. You know, right now I'm driving down 83 or above 83, heading north, and I'm putting myself in a dangerous situation where I'm on the road. If people just neglect the fact that driving a vehicle down the road is a privilege, not a right, and it's very, very dangerous. And for instance, right now I've got about 10 car lengths in front of me. The car in front of me is a red Chevrolet, and the car in front of it is a silver Chevrolet. But it's only got 2 car lengths in front of the car in front of me. So there's 10 car lengths in front of me of a gap, and then there's a 2 car length gap between him and the car in front of him. I just went through a construction zone and had to jump on the brakes pretty hard while I'm talking. But because I left room, I ultimately didn't get rear-ended. People are like, oh, I got rear-ended. It's not my fault. But it is your fault, because if you would have left more room, you could have then slowed down slower, which would have gave the guy behind you a little bit more room to react. So, granted, by law, it is the person that hit me's fault, but if I would have just took the time and just gave myself a bigger gap, I wouldn't have to deal with the BS of being rear-ended just because I simply just left more room.
It's funny, I had a very similar instance this weekend with Chloe.
Tell us about it.
So, essentially the same kind of thing, but I had an officer in front of me, but I looked in my rear view, and you know how sometimes the lights will catch your eyes just right in the rear view where you peek up at it and you're like, that's kind of moving odd? Well, the car that was coming up behind me was coming up faster than I was anticipating, and it didn't look like he had enough space to slow down. So I slowed down hard enough so that I could have enough stopping distance between me and the cop. But then also I gave myself room between me and the cop that if I had to take the shoulder, I could, so that we didn't get hit. And ultimately, unfortunately, yeah, it probably would have hit the cop, but at least I would have saved myself, my daughter, and my wife, you know?
Yeah.
But it gave me that, I have an out just in case of something happening, and I'm able to make a split-second decision.
Absolutely. And that's, so I'll give you a for instance on situations that I've done, and you'll understand as soon as I say it. I've never heard anybody say this, but it's true. The closer you end up to an object, the larger they appear, right?
Yeah.
So the more attention you're going to give it. So if you leave room in front of you, everybody jumps on the brakes. You jump on the brakes really hard, and the person behind you is not paying attention, the closer they get to you, the higher probability is the closer they get to you, the more they're going to see you. Then what you do is you can then jump on the throttle because you've given a bunch of gap in front of you. They see you, you scooch away from them, you give them more time to brake, boom, no one gets into an accident, all because you weren't freaking lazy and you were paying attention and not just going, oh, not my problem.
Or on your phone.
Or on your phone. Put the damn phone down, man. Like, you do not need to be on the phone. There is nothing on a phone. You need to be on the phone, pull the fuck over.
Exactly.
Like, we all know that drivers are distracted as it is. We don't need a cell phone to make that worse. Like, if you're talking to somebody that's got their credentials like I have, listen, and I'm not special. There's a lot of guys out there that is just as good as me at driving. Maybe even better, right? There's a lot of us. And I love all the racers out there, all the different series. We're all amazing freaking drivers. We are different. But that doesn't mean that I just go, oh, well, I can talk on the phone, you know, or I can be, you know, text away while I'm driving. No, I still put that down because at the end of the day, I'm still a freaking human and will make mistakes. So don't stack the odds against yourself. I think that's basically what I'm saying. Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's I'd agree on that.
I tell my kids all the time, play the odds, guys. I was biking down a bike path over the weekend with my kids. My kids, they're 8 and 5 years old, and we biked 16 miles together over the weekend. And while we're biking, I've been practicing on how to ride the bike without holding the handlebars, so riding with no hands. And I used to do it as a kid, and I'd forgotten how to do it, and I've been trying to figure it out again. And so I've been doing it. But over the weekend, we're on a path, and I know the path for, like, every single bump is.
Yeah.
And it was very, very, very windy over the weekend. And my daughter is like, Dad, can I try to, like, start practicing? Can you teach me the secret? And I said, babe, yes, I'll teach you. But keep in mind, think about the odds today, baby. The odds are we're on a path. We're not on this path that often. We don't know it as well as the one we go to all the time. And it's very, very windy. And there's also a lot of people out because it's nice. I said, now is not the time to learn that. The odds are you're going to crash because there's just more outside elements to consider, right? So I'm always telling my kids, what are the odds of this actually working? Or is the juice worth the squeeze, right? Lying to this person about something, is that really to pay dividends in the end? And most of the time, it's not. It's not going to pay. So you're better off not lying. You're better off just telling the truth. Like, I had a deal with a customer last Friday, and the guy has patiently been waiting for his mulch bait and switch and go container. And unfortunately, my vendor that builds these containers is behind. And that is just the reality of the situation. And I called the customer on Friday, and I said, look, man, I'm calling you, not my sales guy. I'm the be-all, end-all in this company. You're not going to get any higher. This is it. I am so sorry, but we are a week behind on this deal, and it's not going to work. Look, you can't come Monday, which was a day ago.
Yeah.
We're going to have to push it back 7 days. And he's like, oh, I'm going to cancel my order and this and that. And I said, look, I understand your frustration. I would be too. But can we just look at the facts here? The facts are containers built, and they are getting built. My vendor is just behind. And if I could throw 10 people at it, get it done faster, I would do it for you. But that's just not the reality. And so I had to have this very hard conversation with this gentleman. And because that I composed myself, because I took his shot, he was threatening to cancel the order and you know, get a little belligerent, and I don't agree with that mentality. I would much rather see people just go, look, are you trying your best? Is this going to happen? Is this going to get done? Okay, let's try to get this done. It sucks. Not fun. But, you know, what's the reality here, Nick? That's what I want to hear from these people. And I think it'd be much more cordial of a situation. And so I finally got him to that point that I was telling him, like, sir, let's call him Jim. Like, hey, Jim, I know where you're at. I've been there. Not fun. I'm sorry. There's no way I can change this. I have exhausted every measure I can. This is where we're at today. And this isn't even guaranteed. I pray to God it is. But this is the reality. And a lot of people will lie. They'll lie in that situation. Go, oh, no, man. You know, well, it's this or that. Or don't worry. Just send your truck. Send your truck here and we'll get done. That truck will come. It'll be here for a week. The customer will get even more pissed because now he knows you're a damn liar. And that just doesn't settle well with people. So just tell the truth from the get-go. Give them as much information as you can. And I promise you, at the end, the odds are that customer is going to respect you more and you're going to have a lifelong customer, period.
Exactly. Well, I think we can wrap that one up there. What do you think?
I love it, man. It reminded me of a live that we did last week. And a lot of people would DM me and they're like, dude, we just love your passion. And I think it just comes from the fact that we spit fire on the realities of life and the realities of situations and remind people that, you know, you can do better and you can handle situations better.
I think it's also we're trying to chase past the personal excellence here, and people can recognize it. And then once it's recognized, they try to do it in themselves. So I think there's like an old saying of like, there's something in that guy I don't like about myself. But I think the same thing is in the reverse of I can see something in them that I like about me. And if you're able to do that, or you're able to portray something that people do like and they're trying to do themselves, it helps grow things exponentially.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you've got to take accountability for every situation in your life. If you've had some bad things happen to you in your childhood, I can tell you that I had some bad things happen to me in my childhood. Don't let it strangle you. It doesn't. What happened yesterday doesn't make who you are today. Your decisions can change, and you can absolutely change what the future looks like for you. You've got to take control.
It's not what happens to you, it's how you handle it.
It's an age old thing around here, man. We live and die by it.
Hell yeah. Well, let's wrap it up there. You want to run her off, or you want me to run her off?
Go ahead. Let her rip.
Oh, man, you're going to have me stutter. All right, everybody. Well, that is the end of this episode. If you would like to get in touch with us, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Nick is actually now posting YouTube videos. Thank God. So get commenting. Get to smashing that like button. Smash that bell. The notification bell. Smash the subscribe button, because if you don't, I'll come after you. Carlson Coaching is still a thing. Check that out. That is in the links in the description below. If you can't find it, let me know, and I will be sure to give you the link directly. And also, feel free to reach out at heyfastlane@gmail.com if you want to be a part of this amazing journey that we are on, trying to, you know, grow and build ourselves, grow and build our community that we have with you guys. Just reach out. If you want to be a part of it, be on the episodes, let us know. Or if you got questions that you want me to ask Nick, or you have a question for me, ask away. So I think with that, we are good and done. Did I get it all right, Nick?
You crushed it, man. You nailed it. Good job.
Hell yeah. I like it, Mr. George. Cool. Winning. Well, y'all have a good one. Let me hear a mulch mate, Nick.
Mulch mate.
All right, don't miss me too much, boys. Bye.
See y'all.